Tech of Sports, episode 40. Kyle Veazey from the Commercial Appeal in Memphis. This week on the Tech of Sports, Kyle Veazey. Netcast Studio mobile apps are a great way to receive our content for your smart devices. There's an app for both iOS and Android. Don't forget the Stitcher Radio app for all iOS devices and Android. Get Stitcher for free with your favorite Netcast Studio shows preloaded. Stitcher Radio, it's an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone and tablet. Stitcher, it's smart radio for your smartphone. And the Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. The Tech of Sports is a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com. You can join us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific at netcaststudio.com/live, where you can join the chat room and listen to the show live. I'd like to welcome everyone tonight, and we're going to talk a little, I guess, newspapers tonight, but a lot more than that, and online journalism, and we're going to talk with a guy that's really has his finger on the pulse of this. And I guess the question to ask is, do you still read newspapers, or do you get your news and sports fix online? It's a delicate balance. We'll talk about that tonight in the ever-changing world of sports journalism with Kyle Veazey of the Commercial Appeal in Memphis. And Kyle is the sports enterprise reporter for the Commercial Appeal. He reports and covers features. He does investigative stories, covers sports business, and whatever else they need him to cover, Memphis Grizzlies, University of Memphis, Big East basketball, Southeastern Conference sports, and anything else that goes on in Memphis. There are professional golf and tennis tournaments, and he's also the author of the book Champions for Change, and we're going to talk about that. That was about Mississippi State back in the day and how they defied segregation. It's put out by the History Press, and it's really the first basketball book on Mississippi State regarding the teams from the late 50s and early 60s. And Kyle, appreciate you joining us tonight. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rick. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, doing well, and we'll see you in less than 2 weeks over at the tennis tournament in Memphis, and yeah. I know you'll be all over that, and it's kind of a tournament that is in a little state of change, and it's going to be, it looks like they have a pretty good field this year, and hope it all goes well. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but just kind of wanted to get your opinion. This is a hot topic. It's been for a couple of years, and just kind of you're involved in it every day as your profession, and kind of the state of newspapers, where we are right now, and kind of how it relates in a city the size of Memphis where you are, and how's the newspaper doing there?
You know, I've spent more time in the past, I guess, 6 months. We've had more conversations in our building in the past 6 months about how we're going to make things better in terms product-wise than the other kinds of conversations, which, you know, every newspaper's had, unfortunately, a lot of in the past few years. But I think that there's a I'm fortunate to be at the Commercial Appeal in Memphis because I feel like we, despite the struggles that come with a market like ours, and there are the struggles, I feel like we still realize, you know, our powers that be still realize that if you put really engaging, good content in front of people, they're going to consume it. And so they dedicate a lot toward news gathering still. And that's great for me. And so I, you know, you mentioned a minute ago about how people consume their news. I read the actual newspaper on my doorstep 7 days a week, the Commercial Appeal. I used to get the New York Times on Sunday, but when I got this new iPad, I'm just the iPad only. But I read the New York Times every morning as well. And so, you know, that proved to me that while I like the newspaper, I'm willing to pay for content that is not, you know, that doesn't get ink on my fingers, and the Times does it for me. So, that's a really long-winded answer of saying, you know, I feel like we in the business to varying degrees, and fortunately at our place to a high degree, realize that no matter what and with everything changing, that good content still sells.
It really does. And I used to read about 7 newspapers a day, and I've cut back on that just because a lot of the same information is in online blogs, online sites. Some of the online sites are actually some of the most read sites when it comes to especially sports. And Memphis is kind of an interesting city because it's a long-time city where college sports really mattered, and a big college sports city. Now, recently, in the last decade or so, you guys have been introduced to professional sports. Well, I guess you had on the fringe professional sports before.
But
the NBA is really one of the big four,
right.
and it's there now. So do people embrace the professional sports, or is it still mainly college sports drives what you do?
No, I think that I'll put it this way: with what's happened with the Grizzlies over the past month, in terms of trading Rudy Gay and trading other players and the salary cap and all that. I mean, you could listen to sports talk radio in this city. I don't do that much of it, but from what I do, 90% of it would be about the Grizzlies and not the Tigers or anything else. But Memphis is such a unique market in the South. I don't think people realize it until they literally pay rent or a mortgage in Shelby County. They don't realize that it's probably the only city in the South, at least the traditional Deep South, where a non-SEC team is the dominant college team, first off. Secondly, with the SEC, there is a tremendous amount of SEC interest in this city, but not for one particular team. Like, there's a lot of Tennessee interest. There's a lot of Ole Miss interest. There's some Mississippi State interest, some Arkansas, whatever. But it's not one particular team, which when you're trying to figure out coverage plans on how to attack the SEC in this city in a newspaper, it's incredibly tough because you don't know who to target because there's not one particular school audience that stands out, but the SEC as a whole does. And then thirdly, basketball is the dominant sport, not football. And there is certainly football interest in this city. I mean, the high school football Friday nights and when the Memphis Tigers are good, they don't dominate conversation by any stretch of the imagination, but they'll get 35,000-40,000 people there. And on Saturdays in the fall, people talk SEC football, but on any random day in the winter, the summer, the spring, and the fall, people in this city are talking basketball, whether that's Tigers or Grizzlies or high schools. It's just not like that in Atlanta or Birmingham or Nashville or wherever. So Memphis is a really unique market, and you add the pro sports, from a business standpoint. It's an incredibly tough market to be a pro sports franchise. The NBA is probably the best fit here because of the natural interest in the sport. But, you're talking about having a building downtown where you're trying to get it 80 or 90% full, paid attendance full 45 nights a year, in a market of about 1.3 million people, second smallest market in the NBA, and the poorest market, not only in the NBA, but the country. You add all that together, it's incredibly tough. And Memphis has been fortunate to have an incredible amount of corporate support on that side.
Yep.
The attendance has never been great with the Grizzlies, but they're probably doing as well now as they ever will. And so they have latched on. The one thing I will say, the one thing that's interesting is this. People I have found who I'm friends with who are in their 20s, early 30s, who have at least probably been around the Grizzlies now for 12 years, and that's sort of been, their thing from being a kid or a teenager on, they tend to talk more about the Grizzlies than they do the Tigers. So I think that's something that a seed that has been planted that has started to really grow.
I think it is, and the Grizzlies do a pretty good job with keeping interest high and offering deals and specials. Their marketing department, I'm sure you know a lot of those guys, they do a pretty good job. And they have to in a city like that. But kind of want to – last year when I was over there for the tennis, I kind of was talking to some of the fans that I've seen at other tournaments before and have seen through the years, and they were kind of walking around with their heads down a little bit. And I know that you were blessed for years that you had one of the best people in sports to cover when John Calipari was there. And they were just moaning the fact that he was no longer there and how they missed him and just how things aren't the same. And talk about what it was like to have him in a town like Memphis. He ruled the town. He was the biggest fish in a big pond there in Memphis. And what was it like to have him and then to lose him? Was it kind of a big letdown?
Well, yeah, I think there's still this will not be a popular thing to say, but I think everyone deep down who's a Tiger, there's still a bit of a hangover there. I mean, and a lot of it is because they don't really want to like the guy because he left for Kentucky and because he was, you know, people said he was a little rough around the edges or whatever. I mean, you know, and because of what happened when he left and taken, you know, that signing class went to Kentucky and all that. There's his name still. People will say he doesn't matter in this city, but his name will still spark some pretty intense debates at the bar about either how bad he is or how awful he is. Probably not sure that's accurate. I think a lot of people who are probably more level-headed will realize, you know, for good and bad, and there was some bad, I'm sure. He elevated, or at least re-elevated, the Memphis program to be in the conversation, at least, with one of the elite programs in the country. I don't know that anyone would say it is, you know, the elite program or one of the five elite programs. But if you said, hey, name me your 20 most elite basketball programs in the country, Memphis probably makes that list right now, and it probably wouldn't have had 10 or 15 years ago. And so people give him a lot of credit for that. I was not here when he left. I was in Mississippi, but it's funny that you asked it because it was such a as someone who's, you know, I grew up around Memphis. Memphis has always been home. So even since I was living in Mississippi, I was like, I had pulled up one of the TV stations live stream of the gate outside his house the day that he left. And that was just so compelling to think that the city was so wrapped up in him and wrapped up in his program that there was a need for a television station to have a live feed of that. And there was. And I watched it, and it was, you know, it was what it was. And the real footnote in that is this: Josh Pastner, the current coach, is one of the nicest human beings you'd ever meet, who will go speak to any event, who will go do anything for anybody probably in this city, and you know, embraces the city, and the city wants to embrace him back so much, but they also would like for him to get to a Sweet 16 or something sometime soon so they can do it, and we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, it's funny you said that the TV was covering the gates of the Calipari house. Those have probably are the second most famous gates in front of a house in Memphis.
That's kind of
funny. And you know, Pastner's doing a great job, and you know, he's in a rough spot. It's like following you know, Brett Favre in Green Bay, or you know, the similar type thing. So he's got to work extra hard to survive and to keep the interest high in Memphis. And it's we're here with Kyle Vesey of the Commercial Appeal in Memphis, talking about covering sports in Memphis and some of the challenges and benefits he has still in traditional newspaper versus online content. And Kyle, kind of talk about when you're doing investigative pieces. This is the tech of sports. What kind of technology do you bring along in your bag, or what do you usually carry when you go to an event that allows you to do your job? And what do you like to use in your personal life? You said you have an iPad, so that's for me as a journalist, that's been my best friend a lot of times.
Yeah, excellent question, because there are so many tools. You know, I think I read the article, you probably read it, of the guy at the radio station in D.C. who only uses his iPhone to, you know, get audio and cut it up and send it in and type in blogs and all that. And that really is all you need. I mean, what I do a lot of times, especially lately, is I try to get a little bit of a video, you know, like a minute video with someone. If I'm doing a feature on someone, I'll interview them. And then when I'm done, I'll say, hey, can I like do basically a stand up, two questions with you? And I shoot that with my iPad. And I think a few years ago, we would have said in the newspaper as well, we need to send a videographer out there, and we need to send them out there with this thousands or $10,000. I don't know how much they are, but, you know, a lot of money invested in equipment. And that person needs to come back to the office and spend all day editing it and have cool graphics. And there's nothing wrong with that. I don't mean to really criticize that. I think that's fine. But it's the technology has gotten to the point now, Rick, as you know, all I have to do, I mean, I go to the Grizzlies locker room after a game, say, and I will put up my iPad, I'll hold it up, get a minute video, push with my thumb the button, go to the YouTube thing, upload it. As I'm walking back to the media room, it uploads through the wireless at the arena. And by the time I get back to my laptop in the media room, it's uploaded on my YouTube channel. If I need to trim it, I can trim it. And then I get the embed code, and bam, it's on the website, like that quick. And that's all you need to do to have passable video now in our industry. So it's really, it's almost embarrassing that it's taken us this long to figure that out, but fortunately we have. And so I don't know how video is one of those things that you assemble readers and you do a survey and you ask them, is it valuable? 50% of them will say, no, I'll never click on video. I hate them. And the other 50% will say, maybe, you know, if it doesn't take too much of my time. And so if it doesn't take too much of my time to do it, I should do it. So the video thing has been kind of something we're working on a lot lately. I do all my interviews, recorded interviews, audio on an iPhone app or an iPad app. And when I'm done, email it to myself, transcribe that way. I use, obviously, social media is big, and that's a whole different topic. But, you know, you think of social media as a reporter, and you think, well, it's good to sit and see what other people are saying, or it's good to sit and see, it's good to sit and broadcast your work, and those are fine. But honestly, you know, I found, the Deadspin story on the Manti Te'o thing, before I got sick of that story, which was just a few hours in, yeah. You know, their reporting on that, you could tell, was very strong in, like, just basically getting a lead and tracking people down through Twitter and Facebook. I mean, you know, Twitter, to match accounts and see what, you know, who's following who. You can do an amazing amount of investigative work just on that. And then, you know, to see what people are saying within, like, a 5-mile radius of 38103, which is our downtown zip code, about a topic, that's interesting. It's always interesting to go back and see people, you know. Today I was looking at Memphis hired a new deputy athletic director, and he had been tweeting for a while. So I went back and read a lot of his old tweets. I wasn't looking for scandal. I don't make people think that. I was just, you know, looking to learn more about the guy. And yeah. And so you can do a lot with that as well. So, oh gosh, there are probably so many other things, but you know, the video part of it and the type of data you can mine from social media is probably something that a lot of reporters don't spend enough time doing.
That really is amazing. And just in a quick answer here, as a newspaper person and a print person, what was your opinion of bloggers and maybe online sites, you know, 5 to 8 years ago when they started breaking stories and started really capturing a lot of readers and a lot of eyeballs compared to now? Are they more legitimate in your eyes? Has that happened? Have they gained your respect? And I know it kind of depends on person to person. You can't loop everyone together. But kind of talk about how your attitude has changed from the print people that kind of look down on the online people and bloggers. Maybe you didn't, but as compared, you know, 8 years ago compared to now.
Oh, I think certainly has improved sort of your thought of individuals. That's the thing, you know, the thing when you come into it as I'm Kyle Vesey of the Commercial Appeal, you bring a little bit of credibility because of that, you know, the Commercial Appeal. I can sort of get phone calls returned to me, you know, because of that, not because I'm Kyle, but because of who I represent. The bloggers don't have that. And so probably 5 years ago, you know, when I was first on the college beat, yeah, I would look down my nose and say, yeah, they don't have the same standards we do. You know, they can speculate and they can, you know, just write whatever they want to and hope they're right and this and that. And you know what? Some of that hasn't changed. However, blogging has been around long enough that it has given rise to people who have made their credibility as a result of it. And now you can look and I don't, you know, I still don't look at blogging as a whole, but when you look at, oh, I see, you know, Joe Blow wrote this. I trust him. I've trusted his work for years. So I will read it and give it the same amount of credibility that I would, you know, anybody in the old traditional media.
Yeah, well, I think that's good, and I think a lot of people feel the same way. Let's take a quick break here, grab a breath or a sip of water. I'm just going to take a quick break for Amazon.com. And if people are doing any shopping with Valentine's Day coming up and then Mother's and Father's Day, they can use the link here at studionetcaststudio.com/Amazon for any of your needs. There's no extra cost to you, and it helps support Netcast Studio and the programming and services it offers. Once again, the link is netcaststudio.com/Amazon, and I'll give a pick for Amazon. We're going to talk here right now about Kyle's book, Champions for Change, and I'm sure that's available on Amazon, Kyle, and I encourage the readers to buy the book through Amazon using the link, and it's a great read, and you do a great job covering a delicate subject, especially in the South. And if you live in the South, it's always a topic on talk radio, like you mentioned before, and with columnists in the newspaper, and you know, segregation was a was a dirty word there in the SEC and still is a little bit looking at the past. And you wrote a great book on a subject a lot of people probably across the country don't know about, Mississippi State basketball, and talk a little about you're from that part of the country, so you maybe have a little more knowledge about it, but I'm sure you had to do some research and talk to a lot of people. Just give a brief overview of the book and what it meant to you to bring that book out late last year.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Essentially it's about a group of basketball teams at Mississippi State in the late 50s and early 60s that won the Southeastern Conference title 4 out of 5 years, but were prohibited until the last year, but were prohibited from playing in the NCAA tournament because Mississippi's unwritten law, so to speak, at the time, kept state-sponsored schools from playing integrated teams. So if you were a historically white school, you could not play an athletic contest against a school that is as few as one African-American players. And so they had some really great basketball teams that did not get their chance on the national stage because of this. And so it took, in 1963, in the fourth SEC title they won, the school president finally said, we're going to send our team and we'll deal with the consequences. And they kind of had to formulate a bit of an elaborate plot to get out of town. And they did. And then, unfortunately for them, they played the eventual national champion in the first game and lost. But it was about a 2-year process for me. I started it when I was living in Starkville, Mississippi, covering Mississippi State for the paper in Jackson, and had been made aware of the story and said, I wanted to read the book on it just because that's, my bookshelf is all full of books of that era. And I just knew there was a book on it. And after looking around, I found out there wasn't. Amazing. And I said, well, this is probably your opportunity, right? I mean, this is like the door open. And so I spent a couple of years, I talked to 25 or 30 of the former players or contemporaries of that era and put this out this year. And it's nice. I don't mean to gloss it over. Like, I enjoy having a book. I'm not here to say that I don't, but it is really nice to have more than that. It's nice that this story is being told because Absolutely. It's just not something that a lot of people know about, and to be associated with it. It's a real treat.
It is. You did a great job. I think it should be required reading for any basketball player coming in to play in the Southeastern Conference. And it's I think you did a great job with it. It's great bringing that story out. I think it would make a very good ESPN little special on that. How they do those 30 minute specials or 60, whatever, ESPN 60, whatever they call it. It would make a great movie. And it's definitely I think it should be required reading. Appreciate you taking the time and doing it and bringing that situation to life.
Absolutely, and I think you're right. I think it would make a good movie. So if anybody wants to, they know how to get in touch with me.
And maybe you could get a cameo in it, Kyle, and you could be a star.
I'll try.
you touched on it a little earlier. We're with Kyle Veazey, the commercial appeal in Memphis, an enterprise reporter and investigative reporter, and just a good guy and a good journalist. You talked a little bit about social media before and kind of the challenges you face. You're very active on Twitter. You do a good job promoting your pieces, other pieces that you think are good and relevant. Do you guys have meetings at the paper, and do they make you do that social media promotion on social media, or is that all you're doing? Or maybe you know a little bit more about social media than some of the higher up people there, so maybe you're kind of giving them information. Talk about that that situation and just how some people have been a little slower to embrace social media than others, and I know you're seeing the benefits for participating with your readers.
Yeah, so many benefits to it. I started it in 2008, back when I was covering Mississippi State, and I specifically remember telling a friend of mine that I was doing it because it would look good to my boss, and after a couple months, I would probably have not enough followers that it would be worthwhile and I'll quit because this Twitter thing isn't going anywhere, right? I couldn't have been more wrong. And I realized it's been one of those works in progress. It's been one of those really big parts of my career, or at least of what I do every day. And it's hilarious. Like, I graduated college in 2004. There's no way we had college class on Twitter because it hadn't been invented yet. Okay. So
I graduated college in 91, Kyle. There, nobody,
there you go.
Nobody even knew how barely to use a computer back then.
So, like, we're feeling our way out on this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And so you learn by trial and error. And, you know, I learned from the beginning. I thought at the beginning it would be good to broadcast my work and not interact with anybody. And that was completely wrong. It's good to broadcast your work. But if you only broadcast your work, you're not getting close to what you can get out of social media. I've met friends. I have a friend who lives in Dallas, Texas right now. I consider him a personal friend because on Twitter we started interacting and now we talk all the time. Rick, I consider you a friend and we know each other on Twitter and that's it. You know what I mean? So like you get to know these people that you never would, all under the guise of doing work and for the company. I do think that if I get on my soapbox a little bit, what bothers me on Twitter from people who do what I do, or at least are in the media, especially in the sports realm, they use Twitter and seem to like to use Twitter as a way to broadcast the most outlandish, loudest, black and white, you know, opinions that they can come up with. And 'cause it fits. I mean, if you say something really outlandish, or if you say that Coach X is awful and can't coach or whatever, you get more retweets. You'll get more people responding to you because it's just like the loudness of sports radio.
I think that's changing a little, Kyle. Though, because
I do think it's changing. I think you're right. I think people are starting to see through it, but I'm not sure enough people have yet.
They will.
I hope you're right.
And I think the little unique little tidbit sometimes that I bring out on Twitter and you do and a few other people I like to follow as well, I think those are starting to get retweeted a little more, and we're getting credit for bringing those things out, and I think that benefits fans as a whole and sports as a whole, in addition to us and our reputation.
I think there's value. I will say that the value in Twitter, if you want to be valuable on Twitter, you have to make your information and your insight, mainly your information, the largest piece of the pie, more than 50% of it. Now, that said, you can't just broadcast information and go home. You have to interact with people, and you also have to, I find it, I'm a local reporter. I'm a Memphis reporter. I have no desire to be a national reporter. I want to be identified with Memphians. I like Memphis. I want people in Memphis to buy our product. So, like, I think a part of the pie for someone like me is to tweet about where I had lunch today, what barbecue joint I had lunch today. And you think, well, why would someone care where you had lunch? Well, I'm not broadcasting the whole lunch, mind you. But if you say, look, man, I just had a great barbecue sandwich at the barbecue shop on Madison, people will say, that's neat. You know, he's here. He's one of us. He's a Memphis. Right. You know, there's that local identification that you can do and sort of reinforce that, you know, that I am in the community, but more than me, like the commercial appeal, our brand is all about Memphis. And so those little things help so much. And it also helps to be another small piece of the pie, not too large, but a small piece of the pie, I think, is to be funny, is to be lighthearted, is to not take anything too terribly serious. And people appreciate that. You can tell.
You do. And some of your pieces are serious and we like that, but you're also, you have a light flavor on there as well, and people appreciate that. We're winding down here, less than 5 minutes to go, Kyle. And you also, let's just touch briefly, you have a big pro tennis tournament coming up in less than 2 weeks. You guys have a PGA golf stop there in Memphis. What do those two events, they're not NBA games and NFL football and Major League Baseball, but what are those, I call them, some people call them country club sports. I call them Olympic sports, because golf's going to be in the Olympics now. What do those two events mean to Memphis and the fans that like those sports?
Well, Memphis is the golf tournament probably means more. I enjoy both of them, but especially the tennis tournament. But the golf tournament probably means more because it's been around longer and it's in the summer and people come and it's it's a bigger, it's just a bigger event. Golf tournaments are just bigger events. The tennis tournament has carved itself out this really interesting niche, and that it's in this, and it's in this, this 5,000 seat barn, essentially.
At the 5,000? Where are those 5,000 seats?
That's what they say. At least that way.
Not a bad seat in that place.
No, there's not, because you know, and there's also no elbow room in that place. But
right.
You know, it'll be interesting to see, and this is a topic for a different day, I'm sure. But you know, the professional tennis tour and these types of events, there's not many of them left, if there are any of them particularly like this left, and Memphis knows that, and the people who own it know that, and they're trying really hard. Their marketing, they try really hard. If you were to be honest with yourself and say, will this tournament be around in 5 years, you'd probably say no, but it's not like you would say it 100% no. You would just say that the odds and the trends are against it. But and it has so many things working against it, like the lack of Americans and just so many things we won't get into. But it's a fun event because it is fan-friendly, and because, you know, if you sit behind the service line, if you sit behind like the if you sit behind the baseline, like right in the middle, you may get pegged with a serve that bounces up. I mean, you're that close. So it's a lot of fun. And those events, I think, you know, we talk about the Grizzlies and we talk about the Tigers, but those two events to me add as much flavor to our really interesting sports scene here as anything else.
And it's really the real sports fans in Memphis turn out for those events, I think. So that's from the people I talk with, that's kind of refreshing. And I hope the tennis tournament is there in 5 years. It's one of my favorite events. I've been to just about every pro tennis tournament in the U.S., and it's along with the Family Circle Cup women's tournament in Charleston. It's one of my favorite events, and for the reasons you said. And we can't talk about Memphis without talking about my favorite food, and that's barbecue. And Memphis is known for a few things: at Elvis, of course, and Beale Street, and of course barbecue. And maybe for me coming into town, and I'm going to be there a few nights and probably eat barbecue twice, where would you say I should go? And maybe a hidden gem maybe that locals know about that you should hit.
Well, the one you've probably been to, it's right by the Racquet Club, Corky's, that everyone knows
of
about.
Course.
Corky's. And I think, you know, Corky's is probably like that name brand that is sort of – I love it. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. As far as hidden gems go, on Madison in Midtown, there's a place called Barbecue Shop that I just love. Their sauce is great. Everything about that place is great to me. I have yet to go to a place on Lamar Avenue called Payne's, and I also haven't gone to Cozy Corner. Those are two places that if you ask, you know, Memphians who have been here longer than I have, that same question you asked me, they would probably respond to that. But we have, you know, dozens of places that I don't think you can go wrong in, but I would certainly try to go to the barbecue shop.
We'll give it a try, and I'll always willing to try a new barbecue place. I like trying them in different cities, and Memphis has some of the best. It's a little different barbecue than in other places, but, you know, there's different types of barbecue, but it's a good barbecue, and Memphis has, like you said, a bunch of places. I'll let you know what my opinion is on that.
Please do. Let me know.
And I always wrap up. I think I know what the answer is going to be. Kind of let on a little bit, but I always ask my guests, what's the one piece of technology right now as you sit here talking to me that you can't live without?
I'd like to say it's my iPad, but I found that to be more of a fun thing than anything else. My iPhone and the Twitter, I can't be disconnected from Twitter, and the best way to do it is on my phone, so it's definitely that.
And I use the phone, and I have an Android phone and the iPad, so I use them both. They're usually both with me all the time.
Yep.
And they're almost a part of our bodies now, and you got to unplug every once in a while for different reasons, but from 7 in the morning until 7 at night, I'm usually on one or the other, so it's a fact of life. And we're wrapping up here with Kyle Veazey, and I recommend everyone to check out his book, Champions for Change, on Mississippi State basketball and all the great teams they had there. And Kyle, what else would you like to promote, and how can fans follow you on Twitter and social media? And here's your chance to get your word out.
Well, my main channel is on Twitter. It's Kyle Veazey, KYLEVEAZEY. You know, other than that, what I do in Memphis is I have the freedom, you know, God bless, I have the freedom from people to go chase whatever is an interesting story. And you know, I'll always come to the Commercial Appeal or commercialappeal.com, because I can assure you there's no shortage of interesting stories in good old Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah, there's a few interesting stories at the tennis, and that's why I'll be there early in the week, because some of those people may not be around later in the week. And And one of them is somebody I've been following for years, and it's Madison Keys, the women's player. And she was there last year, and I think out of all the women players coming up in the U.S., she has the best chance to be a number one player in the world and to win Grand Slam tournaments. And she's a delight to talk with, and I think she could also be a marketing machine. You know, she's a well-spoken, attractive young girl, and she's got a lot going for her. And Memphis is going to have her there next week, so we'll hope the fans turn out to see her and all the great players. Kyle, great talking to you. We'll see you in less than 2 weeks, a little over a week, and you'll be at the NBA All-Star Game. Travel safely. Good talking with you, and hope the book does well. And I always tell everyone to check out that book, and maybe we can make you a movie star in the future.
Well, thank you, Rick. I appreciate your time, and I look forward to seeing you here in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Kyle. And just want to let everyone know that Netcast Studio has many other shows which may be of interest to you. You can head over to netcaststudio.com and check out all of the content that's available, and Radio CSS at radiocss.com. You've been listening to The Tech of Sports, a Netcast Studio production.